Welcome to the Changemakers Podcast, produced by City Current and brought to you by Lipscomb and Pitts Insurance and DataFacts. This show shares personal stories and insight from those who are giving back and making a difference so we can learn and do the same. We cover life lessons, business advice, passion, and purpose. Now here's our host, the CEO of City Current, Jeremy Park.
Welcome to the Changemakers Podcast, produced by City Current. I'm your host, Jeremy Park. We have a personal storyline on the Changemakers Podcast this time. I get to interview my dad, John Park. So, Dad, how are you doing?
I am great, son. Nice to be here.
So you're in town for Thanksgiving. We've got Mom and Dad in. Just came from you playing tennis with Kaysen, our younger son. And so we're putting you to work here. But give us a little bit of your backstory growing up in the Fort Worth, Texas area. So talk about growing up in Texas and what that was like.
Well, it was a different time, different era. In order to enjoy yourself, we had black and white TV. That dates us, doesn't it? And very few channels. At about 11 o'clock at night, TV went off the air. So you had to pretty well go to sleep. Most of our entertainment was outdoors playing with our neighbors, riding bicycles, playing sports. That was the entertainment because we didn't have the iPhones, the iPads, and all the technology that they have today. So we just had to get to know each other.
So you played sports. Baseball in particular is one of them. But talk about sports and what that meant to you growing up.
Well, it taught me a lot about team building and team dynamics. I was fortunate back during our era, you pretty well played every sport. You didn't specialize like they do today. So I played football, baseball, basketball. I was a gymnast. So a little bit of swam on the swim team. So just kind of multi-fun with meeting lots of people.
So brother and sister on your end as well. Give us a fun family tradition.
Fun family tradition would have been, of course, Christmas getting together. And my mother was the hub of the family. She was one of 13 children, and she was the youngest, but everybody gravitated around her. So all different holidays, everybody came to our house. So all the cousins, everybody, good times.
You lost your father at an early age. Discuss your relationship with your father and just what that was like losing him at a young age.
Well, we were very close. I was 19 years old, a freshman in college. He had a stroke my senior in high school. And so that determined kind of me staying around Fort Worth area. So I accepted a scholarship to Texas Wesleyan to play baseball. It was a good decision from the standpoint I was down at Georgetown University when they contacted me where he died. So he was close, meant a lot.
He was a tennis player as well. That's something that kind of runs in our family. Give us a memory of your father, and whether it's sports or just something that was a cool experience for him personally that he was able to share with you.
Well, of course, the best one is when you talk about tennis is my biggest goal was to beat my dad, which never happened. As you know, he was national champion in college. And no matter how good I got, he could just stand there and beat it, make me run all over that court. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I had to hit it right back to him every time. So he was quite a tennis player during his years.
What, on your end, is advice that either your mom or dad gave you that still stands with you today? So a lesson learned or a piece of advice?
Oh, I think the best one is there's things you need and things you want, and you have to take care of the priorities first. Just because you want them doesn't mean that you have to have them. So you need to take care of the basics first, and that's what I always remember.
So you, on your end, you were in kind of the meatpacking industry. You eventually went into the insurance industry. Baseball was a big part of, you know, kind of your career, not only with college, but share a little bit of just kind of working your way through college and ultimately choosing to go in the insurance industry.
Well, as I mentioned, when Dad died my freshman year, I had to start making some money to help my mom because he didn't have the insurance at that time. He was in service, and I'm not going to go into all the details, but he died without insurance. He came out of the service disabled, and so I helped her. So I was working, going to school and working 80 hours a week, trying to make a living for everybody.
And share a little of the relationship with your sister and brother and kind of growing up and having to kind of step in and work your way through, but also support your family and kind of what that's like when you look at having a brother and sister, but the dynamic of helping your mom.
Well, Tommy was in college at the time. And so it was much easier for me at that time, because I was a freshman, to help him financially and help mother. So he was able to finish his degree. And at that time, my sister was married and had a child. So she was kind of out from the house at that point in time. But Tommy and I are very close. We weren't younger because there was 5 years difference in our age. But as we matured in age, that age gap went away. And so in his later years, he and I were very close and talked often and got together quite often. Sandra, not so much. We'd talk and visit, but not like Tommy and I did.
Yeah, and Tommy, actually, I mean, for us growing up, we lived in the same small town, whatever you want to call it, city of Weatherford. So he literally was just down the street, which made it really nice as well. We'll talk about him and Aunt Diane in just a second. But so share with us a little bit, going to Wisconsin, that's where me and my brother Jeff were both born, but getting into the insurance industry and talk about that transition and how you got into the insurance industry.
Well, I was very active in college. I was sang in a select choir. I was in musicals. I was on the baseball team and heavy involved in intramural sports with the college kids. And I was working, as I mentioned, 80 hours a week at Superior Meat Company. And during that my years, I had my insurance agent keep coming to me saying, why don't you come in the insurance business? You know everybody. You're very active, which I was, because I was also involved in the Chamber of Commerce and stuff in Fort Worth. And so I made a decision when I finished my degree to go into the insurance business. Same time my wife decided to give up her job, I came home and said, honey, I've decided I'm quitting and going straight commission. She said, oh, well, I've quit my job. I'm going to have to find one. So we just bought a new home and new car. So we had to get busy.
Talk about how you met mom. So how'd you meet Julie?
Well, we knew each other from high school and junior high, really, more as friends and acquaintances. And I was a year ahead of her at Texas Wesleyan. And she came in and we formed a bond and a friendship all through college. And so that friendship has carried over for all these years.
So share a little about the baseball side, because what's interesting, I mean, now looking at it, professional sports, you make a ton of money. But back then, you could make more money even going commission, but doing insurance. So talk about kind of having to choose different career paths.
Well, as you mentioned, back then in baseball, signing bonuses were $2,000 or $3,000, not $250,000, $1 million back then. And even the pros rode buses to ball games. They didn't have these nice airplanes. I remember 1967, Oakland Athletics won the World Series, and their whole payroll was $260,000 roughly. I mean, that's not even the starting salary of a rookie. So, yeah, times were different back then. You could go to work for companies and make more money. You didn't get the prestige maybe, but I had to look at my family and what we wanted to do.
And so when you look at working in the insurance industry, give me maybe, especially as a career path for those that are saying, hey, I either work in the insurance industry or I want to go to work in the insurance industry. What's something that you've learned from working in the insurance industry?
You have to be able to realize that you're going to get a lot of no's. You're going to get a lot of people who get upset that you're even asking them. But then you're going to make a lot of relationships and a lot of friends, and you're going to take care of a lot of families when they need you the most. When claim times comes, either death or disability or sickness, that's when they really appreciate you.
So let's start with, give us kind of a fun memory of me and my brother growing up. So I'll let you pick and choose however you want to take that between like us personally or together. But give us kind of one memory that stands out for me and Jeff.
Oh, I think the most fun one for us was when we lived in Milwaukee and Brookfield, and we got so much snow that it went up to the front door all the way to the top, and you couldn't even see out the windows. And here you two boys are out there digging tunnels all the way out to the street, and we couldn't see you. We couldn't find you. but y'all were having a blast with the snow. Those are good times. The other was when we were you were riding on more, and you flipped a snake up on the pedal, and you went flying off as fast as you could. You weren't having anything to do with that snake. Of course, you'd killed it by flipping it up there, but.
Yeah, that wasn't a fun memory on my end. Just for the record, we had like how big, 2 acres or something like that. And I'm in many cases out there with a push mower. You don't find that these days. Good lesson to learn as a kid. Talk about on your end, we'll say as a father, the difference of personalities and Jeff versus me. This is more for listeners, but also for my own just, you know, curiosity, but just the difference growing up between Jeff and me.
Well, you're two different times. You're our very first, so we're much learning curve with you, where Jeff is like a typical second child. Okay, we know what's going to happen. You were always fun-loving and enjoying people and always wanting to have a good time. Jeff was the same way, but more serious about some things and more. So you focused heavily on tennis and did outstanding in tennis. Jeff played at it, but he was outstanding. But you had more focus on what you wanted to do. That's why you played all over the world.
Yeah, and I tell people all the time, Jeff had way more talent. It was just a matter of me being more focused and taking it serious. Talk about Boy Scouts, because obviously this is a big transition on our end of the conversation, because Scouts is something that is a big part of our family life, especially for you and Jeff being an Eagle Scout. But for you, you still continue to host huge jamborees and merit badge colleges and heavily, heavily involved in getting so many hundreds, if not thousands, of scouters, obviously in the program, but even to Eagle Scout. So talk about scouting, Boy Scouts of America, and what that means to you and to our family.
I stay in scouting because it's one of the few organizations that still teaches the young people, and it's now young ladies as well, respect for each other, teaches them focus. It teaches them to understand that it's better to give than receive. Because right now, the young people historically are saying, what's in it for me? And scouting is saying, hey, how can I help you? How can I do things for you? And team building, leadership. There's not many places anymore that you can go with young people that are teaching them how to step up and become leaders. And scouting is one of the few ways that's still left doing that. We do a national youth leadership course for both male and females. And it's an outstanding course in teaching them how to handle people and situations, conflict management, all kinds of situations. And I think that's important. We also are one of the few that still do a Sunday service when we're out on campouts and stuff. So we touch on all the, you know, if a person lives by the 12 points of the law and by the Scout Oath and Law, be it male, female, just people in general, then they're going to be good people.
Share, you just recently had, 6,000 scouters out?
Yes.
So talk about that.
Well, every 4 years, the Longhorn Council in Fort Worth has a campery that we host in the last four times, 2008, 12, 16, and actually we would have done 2020, but we ended up doing it in 19, 3 years rather than four, because this is our 100-year anniversary. And the council asked me if I would step up and do the, I wasn't going to do it, not a fourth time, but they asked me, since we only had about 8 months when we found out we're going to be able to get Texas Motor Speedway to put it together. And we had over 6,000 kids out there. A lot of events for the kids. We have about 150 for the Cub Scouts, around 170 for the Boy Scouts. And then we have a midway, bar none, where we brought in all kinds of, we brought up the AT-AT gun from the Battleship Texas, where kids could play on it and pretend they're shooting down aircraft. We brought in fire trucks. We brought in squad cars, SWAT cars. We brought in all kinds of national youth programs where they could do scavenger hunts and earn prizes. Dick's came out and gave away about 2,000 different events, games for the kids. And Alps from Missouri came down. It was just a great weekend. We had the cavalry out there, the 1872 cavalry. We had the medieval times. We even brought dinosaurs out there this time. We had two giant dinosaurs walking among the kids They're, of course, robotic, but they were a big hit with the kids. And then we have a big stage show Saturday night. This all happened on Saturday. And then we bring in a band and award a bunch of awards from the best gateway, the best campsite, all kinds. We had Pinewood Derby races and Pushmobile races. And anyway, it was a great time held by all.
So how many are – well, let's say how many would you kind of peg in terms of those that you've helped get their Eagle Scout?
Well, right now I have a little over 80 kids that I've worked with to finish their Eagle. We have four more that will be getting it in the next 3 months, and then we have another six that are Life Scouts that I'm helping them finish up, and they'll probably get it by June, July. We've got two young ladies that came in February who are already first class, and they already have enough merit badges to be a star, but they have to wait 4 months and have 4 months of leadership before they can get their star rank. They are just busting out the seams to get – they want to be the first Eagles.
Nice. So what does it mean when you look at Jeff, because Jeff being an Eagle Scout, and you and Mom both Silver Beavers, when you look at those sort of accomplishments, what does that mean for Jeff, and but for you as well as the father?
Well, I'm just glad that he realized the importance of the Eagle at a young age. He was one of the youngest Eagle Scouts in the Longhorn Council at the time. And he stayed focused and stayed in the program. He didn't just get his Eagle and get out. He stayed in the Order of the Era, became the chapter chief for our chapter, and then was elected by the 38,000 kids to be the lodge chief. And he did an outstanding job in leading our lodge for the time period he was in there. But I can tell you what being an Eagle Scout today means. With all the things that are happening, this is during Jeff's time and currently. As an employer, I have a hard time hiring young people today. I hate to have it on a podcast, but they don't know how to focus. If they can't be on their phone, they can't be on their iPad talking to each other. They'll be sitting at tables talking to each other with their texting instead of looking somebody in the eye and talking with them. An Eagle Scout, I know, will put down their toys and actually go to work on a project, stay focused, and complete that project. And in order to get the project done, they have to show leadership. They have to organize it, plan it, and delegate and get the job done. And so when I'm looking for somebody that I may want to hire for a job, I look at Eagles. They get a top priority because I know they will be focused.
Share a little bit about Jeff and his experience in the Marines. I tell people all the time, Jeff, you know, always wanted to be a Marine. As soon as he could sign up, he went. When I'm speaking, I share the story of him basically getting the message when he's out at boot camp that they're going to have to kick him out. But then you all getting within a very short amount of time, you know, a general on vacation to give him the approval to stay in. But give a little bit of just your side with Jeff and serving our country.
Well, you're right. Jeff wanted to be he actually wanted to be a pilot. But when he went to Baylor to visit you and they had recruiters down there, they told him at that time that if he wore glasses, he could never be a pilot. So he changed and said, if I can't be the head guy, I'm going to go a different route. So he wanted to be a Marine. I wanted a college degree. Your mother and I did. So I had some many friends of mine that went to Vietnam that said they were going to get their degree when they came back, and life had changed, so they never completed it. So I was really encouraging him to stay in college and get that. So he found he could be a reservist. So he went into the reserves for 4 years and finished it. What the story you're talking about is during that period of time, he talked to the recruiters and asked, could he have LASIK surgery done? And they said, oh, yes, that's not a problem. You can have it done. You just need to get a clearance from your eye doctors and stuff. So quite a few of my good friends in scouting are all eye doctors, specialists. And they assured me it would be good. And so he had it done. We had them all check him. And they said, yes, he had a beautiful eye surgery. You couldn't even tell he had it. And my wife asked, if it was your son, would you let him go in the service? I said, without any question. Well, then he gets to the time of truth, starting the first week of boot camp stuff, and they ask if anybody had any surgery. Well, the recruiters, everybody knew he already had the surgery. He told them they had it, and they gave permission. Well, we learned that during that period of time, that was not an allowed procedure. And so they called and said, we're going to be sending him home. And so we asked, well, how much time do I have? And they said, well, the general's not on the base right now. We can give you a couple of days. So my wife and I said, fine, just keep him there. Don't send him home. And so we got busy networking. That's one thing I enjoy about scouting and other people is I do a lot of networking. And so we talked to a real close friend of ours in high school. He was a congressman. And I explained the situation to him. And I said, I bet they didn't explain everything to the general and stuff. They just said, oh, he's had it and he's out. But bottom line is Ernest went in, Ernest Distook, and talked with the generals and stuff. And they came back. And then I listened and I said, okay, hold on to him. Let me think about this one. And Julie and I talked and we overcame those objections. And the one that got me the most was when Ernest and I were talking with the head general at Quantico. He said, well, you know, they have to do a lot of exercise. I said, well, he's been working out with the Marines for almost 6 months after the surgery. No problem. Well, what about swimming? I said, well, he's been swimming in our backyard for a couple of months and that hadn't bothered him. He said, what about air pressure flying? I said, well, he's flown to Florida and California with us. That didn't bother him. So well, what about that gas chamber? I said, we don't have one of those. You got me there. I said, but somebody's got to be tested, and we're willing to sign a waiver if you're willing to listen. And the general told Ernest, he said, let me think about it overnight, and we'll let you know tomorrow morning early. And he called, and he said, yes, he can stay. And so then when Jeff graduated, we were out there, and the head general at that particular base, the other general was the one that made the decision. He sent a runner to try to find us. Because he wanted to know who this...
Yeah, he was looking for a celebrity.
Yeah, who in the world could get a general in Quantico to change his mind to let him stay? And anyway, we had a nice visit, but he was surprised, and he couldn't figure out what a Texan is doing with an Oklahoma congressman who served on the appropriations bill. And I said, well, we went to high school with him. We're close friends. My wife sat next to him all through because hers was Ivers, his was Istook, when they did alphabetical, and I dated Linda, his sister, all through high school. And so he went to bat for us, and I knew if anybody would, he would.
Talking about as a parent, though, I think what's interesting about that is, especially for mom, you know, there's a dynamic where you just want your son safe. And so there's a piece where it's like, okay, well, here's an easy out. At the same time, that's not his dream. His dream is to serve our country. And so going to bat for his dream, because overall, that's the most important thing. But putting kind of the parent hat aside to your son hat being the most important. What was that like?
Well, it was a tough decision because neither one of us wanted him in the Marines. Too many things were happening at that particular time. Now, we weren't in war at a particular time. Now, his senior year were, but this was his dream. And we were going to, as parents, we were going to do whatever it took to try to give him the opportunity that he was wanting to do. He had done the right steps, but we learned that some people don't always tell you the whole story when they're recruiting young men and women. But yeah, it was a tough decision because one side of us says, no, we can get him out, but that's not what his dream was.
Yeah. So flip it back. So growing up in Weatherford, really cool. So we both had Aunt Sandy and Aunt Diane close, but Aunt Diane teaching us school. And so we lose Aunt Diane my senior year, sadly, to an aneurysm. And then we've lost Uncle Tommy. We've lost Aunt Sandy. So when you look at now kind of the...
And Uncle Roger.
And Uncle Roger. So, I mean, when you look at kind of going through just our family, we've lost a lot of loved ones. How has that kind of shaped your perspective, losing your brother and sister, obviously your mother and father, but then when you look at Aunt Diane, Uncle Roger too, our family is very small now. But how has that changed your outlook on life?
Hasn't so much changed it. It just made it focused where we want to spend as much time with the family as we can because you don't know when that's going to happen. And especially as we get older, things happen both to young and old. My nephew, Bobby was killed in a motorcycle accident. He's 30-something years old. I mean, Sandra's son. I mean, who would have dreamed that? A friend of mine is not a family, but he's like a brother. Michael Bay's wife, they're on a bucket list thing. And she's 53, 54 years old. And they went up to Yellowstone, had a great time, took a nap, got up, she fell over dead. I mean, no history, anything. So as I get older, I realize that we need to spend time with the loved ones and let them know you love them.
So on your end, give us kind of a fun memory when you look at, we'll do one of each. Give us one fun memory with you and Uncle Tommy.
Oh, Tommy and I, like I said, we were with the age difference all through high school and junior high, we weren't that close. As we got closer, I guess the times we'd get together for Thanksgiving.
And we always had it at their house.
Had it at their house. We had Christmas at our house. And he loved to entertain. He loved to decorate. But he also loved you and Jeff a lot. I mean, he enjoyed having y'all over, and he would take care of you when we were out of town doing our company trips and stuff. So,
and he put us to work, too. Jeff and I both had a chance to work in the bookstore. He used to do the Weatherford College bookstore, and that was our way of both making some extra money, but also, too, just being with him and spending time as a family, which was really important. Give us one fun memory of Aunt Sandy.
Well, that's a toughie.
You two are polar opposites. We'll say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we certainly are. It's hard. I think fun times was watching her and the kids, and I remember us at a park for a family reunion. This is when we're older. And she turned to me and said, I think Julie was standing there too, said, you know, remember when we were kids and we were out there playing around and everything, and those old folks were sitting back here at the picnic table watching us? She just stopped and looked and said, that's us now. So times change quicker than you think.
Thank you for listening to our Changemakers podcast. City Current is a catalyst of over 100 partners joining forces and funds to power the good through free events, positive media, and philanthropy. If you like our efforts and you're looking to power the good with us, follow us on social media at City Current and check out our website at citycurrent.com. Please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast wherever you listen. And if you know a changemaker, please reach out and let us know so we can consider them for a future show. The Changemakers podcast is brought to you by DataFax. DataFax is a national provider of trust background screening products such as criminal searches, drug screening, employment and education verifications, and post-hire monitoring to employers of all sizes. DataFax is one of the few background screeners that holds the stringent National Association of Professional Background Screeners accreditation. They're certified by the WBENC as a 100% woman-owned business, and in 2018, they were ranked by HRO Today's Baker's Dozen customer satisfaction ratings as one of the top background screeners in the nation. You are in good hands with DataFax. Visit datafax.com to learn more and make sure to mention the Changemakers podcast. And now back to the show.
Give us, so on your end, you mentioned the importance of scouts and also to the fact that when you're hiring on your end, you look for things like having an Eagle Scout on the resume because it shows focus, it shows commitment, it shows discipline. Give us one piece of advice on your end as you look, especially for entrepreneurs, young professionals, as they look to create their own destiny, what's a piece of advice for them?
Get to know resources. Get to know people. Because, as you say, money can't walk or talk. But the people that have the money have a lot of talent and a lot of good advice. So seek it out. Ask lots of questions before you just jump right in.
What on your end, when you look at in the insurance business and your career path, how did mentorship and others play a role in helping to guide you and get you ultimately to where you were able to be successful?
I was very fortunate in my early career that I met a young man at that time, Bill Markey, who was vice president of Time Insurance, a very large conglomerate of companies. And he came down, just visited, and asked me to go eat lunch with him. Didn't think anything of it. I represented the company. And about 8 months later, he contacted me and asked me if I would sit down with him. He wanted to hire me for a job and wanted me to move from Fort Worth to Oklahoma. And I told Bill I really appreciated the opportunity, but I had a five-year plan, and I hadn't finished it, and it didn't mean moving that many miles. And so, but we formed a bond and a friendship. And so we talked often. And then about 2 years later, he contacted me and asked me if I'd fly to Milwaukee because he wanted to talk to me. And he ended up offering me his job as vice president of the company. And I was 26 years old. And I told my sweet wife, I said, honey, you know, young men don't get an opportunity to go do this that young. Why don't we go up there for a few years, and then I'll come back to an insurance company back here in Texas. And being the sweet wife she was, she said, sure, let's go. And so we went up there, and I kept getting promotions and stuff. And then she said, you're serious about staying up here? And I said, yeah, I like it. Of course, you got to understand, you were young. Y'all enjoyed the snow and the cold, but for poor Julie, she was in blizzards and everything, and it was a mess. I moved out of town. I mean, if it's winter, I'm in Florida giving a talk. I'm in California. I'm in Texas. And so poor Julie trying to rear two kids in freezing weather. So she and I, she decided she's coming back to Texas with or without me. So I decided to join her. And everything worked out well, so I can't complain.
Give us obviously, on your end, been in Weatherford, Texas for a long, long time. But what does Weatherford mean to you and Mom?
Well, it's been a good home. We've been there 31 years. We built a home there, and we met a lot of good people. The town's growing leaps and bounds. So it's gone from a small town to a medium-sized town, and you're almost getting where you can't tell you're in Weatherford to Fort Worth. It's almost everything's getting bought out and built up. When we first moved there, there's no malls, there's no major restaurants. Today, it's all packed and all that stuff. And but it's still a nice town. I mean, I still don't like driving in Fort Worth or Dallas for traffic. We have to do it, but Weatherford's easier to get around. But it's getting a lot of people there.
So when you look at, especially now, families that are moving to Weatherford and just young families in general, what sort of things, when you look at the community-oriented approach and the activities for the kids, what were some of the things that you think were important for us, including Scouts, that you recommend for, especially for young families, to get their kids involved in?
Well, they're all very involved, and always really have been, between soccer, baseball, basketball, all your major sports, swim team in the summer. They keep talking about building an indoor gymnasium with an indoor swimming pool. And they've got all the main amenities that a family would want there. So from that standpoint, all you enjoyed baseball and soccer and all the other sports that you did there, and tennis. So it's just a good community for young kids.
Give us one, whether it's a camp out. Philmont is one that sticks out to me. We spent a lot of time at Philmont doing Scouts and climbing up in the mountains and. But give us a favorite. I know you can't really pick a favorite, but give us one that sticks out, you know, in terms of a scouting experience for you.
Well, I guess the one is when your mom and I went out there for a course, and we walked the Yucca Trail and everything, and she walked right up to the top. I mean, we did it together. We've done a lot of hiking together, so it's a lot of fun. You and Jeff went off and had a lot of fun while we were down doing training sessions. In the past 3 or 4 years, I've been fortunate to go back as an instructor, and I love that because I get to stay in a real nice two-bedroom cabin with the showers and everything. I'm not in tents, and somebody else cooks all the meals for the staff, so it was pretty nice. Walk outside with deer and bear and everybody right there in your front yard.
Yeah, we learned a lot of lessons about bears and not keeping things in your tent versus hanging them up. What... So on your end, I kind of laugh and the family laughs, but it's true. You have something literally for everyone. You have trailers at the house. You have camping gear at the house. You've got computers and printing machines and everything. So at all hours of the day, people can kind of come over and use whatever you've got. But share, you know, your philosophy on kind of you're always out kind of looking for good deals, and you do it in the sense that it you can use it to help others. And so I think that was something that really, I talk about it, but for Jeff and I both, seeing kind of this open door philosophy where people at all hours of the day or night could come over, and whether they needed something printed, we're going through a hard time, we're down on their luck, you and mom would basically let them in and take care of them, and whether that's feeding them, giving them access to all these things and gadgets, or, you know, sending them on their way, borrowing all these gadgets, really using all of your resources to help power the good. But share kind of that side of, because you don't see that a lot. You don't see people that just freely give everything and loan it out, or just say, hey, come over and use it. But talk about that on your approach to just life and helping people.
Well, I feel very fortunate that all my life, God has helped me. I've made very good money. I've worked for it, but I've made very good money. And I realize a lot of people, no matter how much they struggle, can't have some of the opportunities, but I'm also very tight with money. So I do a lot of creative shopping, and I try to anticipate what I might need coming up. And so I buy it when it's on a big discount, rather than the last minute have to have it and have to pay full price. But I also, am, as you mentioned, so involved in different organizations and stuff. And so I realized down the road I'm going to need different copy machines and printers and computers. And I'm very fortunate that I married the right woman, your
they
mother.
They let you do all that?
Yeah, they let me do all that. funny story is not funny, really, but somebody wanted to borrow my 6x12 enclosed trailer, and they borrowed it. And they blew out the side panel on the tire and the wheel well and brought it back to me. And she wasn't too happy about that one, but we got it fixed. And then somebody else borrowed it, and I wouldn't tell her for 6 months that they totaled it. And
hopefully this isn't a surprise to her. She's listening.
I had to finally tell her I was trying to get it fixed, see if there's any way I could get it fixed and not have anybody know it. But I didn't win that one. So eventually an insurance company and I had to settle up, and I went and bought a new trailer to replace it. But that's the tough part, is when you loan things out, you hope that they come back in the same condition. And then I do a card catalog like a library, because people tend to borrow things and they don't mean to keep them, but they forget after time. And so fortunately I call them up and ask them to bring it back. And that's the toughest part about it, is I don't mind helping people, but I wish they'd bring stuff back.
Well, but then part of that, though, is you loaning it to them, but then the next person to be able to loan it to the next person to pay it forward, you have to be able to bring it back. And I think that's part of it, is knowing that you're not doing it necessarily to keep it for yourself, because half the stuff in the garage has no interest for us as a family, but it's for kind of somebody else to be able to use in case they need it. So I think that's a piece
true.
Of it.
I have a 10x16-foot storage house full of Boy Scout equipment.
Yeah.
And they borrowed all the time, be it cots, be it sleeping bags, be it tents, netting. Because again, these get expensive, and some of these families that come in don't have that kind of cash flow. And fortunately, a lot of people bring me theirs when they get out of scouting, and I just put it in inventory and loan it back out to other kids. I probably have 15 backpacks. The people have gone to Philmont and they've grown up and no longer, so they donate it back, and I donate back out to other people. So it's just giving and sharing.
I think it's important for people to understand just your heart, and also too, just little things like that, because those are easy ways for people to help others, is to be able to do exactly what you're doing. Carry that forward a little bit, in the sense that on your end, being intentional about using these resources to help others. Talk about Rocky, because he's someone that Rocky is, he was our coach both for me and Jeff for tennis for a long time, really became a family friend. But, you know, I think it just kind of shares the heart of for you and mom. He would come over all the time, and just, you would let him use our racket stringing machine, so that way he could make some extra money. But he would come over and string rackets, and then hang out at the house and just watch TV with us, and in many cases be there all day and night. And he just became part of the family. But I think that's another side that you don't necessarily see in community anymore, is this sense of community, where it literally is an open door or house and saying, hey, we've got a stringing machine, we're using it half the time, why don't you come over and use it, and you can make some extra money. But I think it shows the heart for you and mom. But talk about kind of Rocky and the relationship with the family.
Well, Rocky has been a good friend. He coached you and Jeff, as you mentioned, in the early stages, and helped get you up to a certain level until you had to go to the next level of coaching. But Rocky is just a good, kind-hearted person. He's in very poor health right now. He's I had major surgeries and stuff, and we still try to get with him and do stuff. But Jeremy, you know, you were a unique young man. When you were in school, you had so many friends that when you'd come home from school, your mother and I look at each other and said, how many are we feeding tonight? Because you'd come home some nights with 10, 12, 15 yeah, people.
And not all of them spoke English either.
Yeah, no, they didn't. And
exchange
so
students.
You helped along the journey just keeping an open door because you just people just gravitated to you because you enjoyed people. And we didn't mind a bit you bringing them home and letting us meet them too.
Yeah, our house became kind of the hub for everyone. But I think even when in college, as we all went different ways, your house was the place that everybody would come back over and hang out with. And in many cases, they would come to our house before they'd even go to their own family's house to hang out with. And I think that's, you know, whether it was Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever else, they would spend it with us in many cases and then go over to their family's house. I just think it says a lot about just, I think you all, especially with, like I said, the idea of opening up your home.
Well, we enjoy people. And it is funny because we'd get quite a few parents call us and say, I understand my son's been over there. Can you tell us, is he a good son? How's he doing? Because they talk more to us sometimes than they did to them. But you just had a good group of people that you ran with. So that had a lot to do with it, too.
Give us one thing that you wish people would know about you and Mom. Like one thing that is important to you that others know.
We're very quiet.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, both of us care about people. We want to help people, and we want to see them succeed. We want to see them have a good life and a happy life. And so we listen. And many times we don't give advice. We just listen because a lot of times people just want to talk, and they'll convince themselves what the answer is without us saying much. So being there is the most important for some people.
So let's switch over. We call it lightning round, but it's just short questions, short answers, just as a fun way to kind of wrap up. One, give us a recent movie or TV show that you've watched.
Recent would be John Wayne, but I don't even know the name of the movie. It's an old one. I don't watch a lot of TVs. If I'm sitting there too long, I may go to sleep. But
you and I are the same as we go.
Frozen 1 the other day. It's been a while since I'd seen it, and I had to recognize that I'd seen it. Been so long, but I did watch Frozen, regular Frozen. It was on TV.
I was going to say, we both will go, and then all of a sudden, as soon as we sit down, we're just out. So whatever's on TV, if we're not moving, we're just out. What's a recent book you've read?
I guess Michael Koda's book on power, how to get it and how to use it.
What's a favorite spot that you and Mom like to go to? Bed. I know you're going to Disney soon, but you just like to sleep. All right.
Well, we go to bed about 2, 3 in the morning and I get up around 6:30 every day. So mine are short sleeps. She'll do about the same. Bed is nice to have, but we get on a project. We can get more done after midnight because the phones aren't ringing. People usually aren't coming through your front door. So that's about it.
What's a favorite date night? I know you'd like to eat out at night. So what's a favorite date night?
I don't know if we really have a favorite after the few years we've been married, which is many. We just like to we'll go out and talk and visit over dinner. But she was my right-hand person for 48 years in the insurance business. She is my administrative assistant, helping me do a lot of stuff. So we've been very close all these years.
What do you like to do to relax?
Mow the yard.
Okay. What on your end is I know the answers to these, but give us your favorite sports teams.
Well, you know the Cowboys and Rangers, and both of them are about the same hot water right now. I still like Green Bay because we lived up there and watched them play when we lived up in Milwaukee. Those are really the favorites. Football, I've gravitated toward TCU, even though I didn't go there, simply because of Julie's sister and brother-in-law and their family.
Yeah, they're all
and it's in Fort Worth.
Yeah, all close.
Yeah.
What what on your end, when you look at people who are coming in, especially we'll go with Weatherford, what's something that you like for people who've never been to Weatherford to go and do? Like where would you want to take them to Weatherford in Weatherford?
Well, the biggest thing is Chandra Garden. That's a national garden built by a man who painted portraits of the queen and the king, and everybody is very famous. And the city took it over, and they've kept it beautiful. So that's the biggest thing in Weatherford. Of course, we're the cutting horse capital in Texas. So if they're interested in horses, there's plenty of places to take them.
What's a favorite place that you visited around the world?
Probably Amsterdam to Denmark, to Legoland, when we took you kids there. Those are good times. Anne Frank's home was interesting. Thinking she lived in that little bitty room up there all those periods.
What's a favorite quote that you either remember or think about, or just what's a favorite quote?
Well, the quote I use with the kids, even to this day in our troop, is if it is to be, it's up to me. Meaning that if you want to succeed, we will give you all the opportunities, but it's up to you to take advantage of them and step out and do it.
So last question, what do you want your legacy to be? When you look at it, I mean, obviously you're still creating it every day, but what, when you look back and the difference you made through scouting and the insurance industry, and obviously as a father, and you know, when you look across the board, what do you hope your legacy is?
I hope everybody goes with the philosophy that it's better to give than to receive. Because I think if we're all giving and taking care of others, it's a great world.
So what's an easy way? You're somewhat on social media, but what's an easy way for listeners to at least follow you, see you? Where would you direct them? Anywhere?
To you.
That's a good answer. Just come to me and I'll point you in the right direction. Nice. All right. Well, that's John Park, my father. Good, fun chance to learn from him and to hear some of the other sides of the stories. But Dad, you are a change maker, obviously, my father, but you've been a blessing to so many others. And I think that's the cool thing is when you look at just how you've impacted not just the lives of, for me and, you know, my brother Jeff, but our kids and so many others and from Texas and beyond. Absolutely just a huge blessing. So thank you for being a change maker. Thank you for being my father. Thank you for coming on the show. Greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Changemakers Podcast, produced by City Current and brought to you by Lipscomb & Pitts Insurance and DataFax. To learn more about our guests and to share your stories of others leading by example, visit us online at citycurrent.com and follow us on social media using @citycurrent. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast wherever you listen. Now, think big, start small, and act now. Be a change maker.